Gentlemen, I want to ask you if you remember the last story that Dain Lopian, Zichron Elivrach, said, the famous last story that Dain Lopian said. Do you remember on that dinner how Dain Lopian shared the story, the famous story? He was famous before, he's become even more famous later. How Dain Lopian, Zichron Elivrach, the famous story, who supports whom? Does it ring a bell to anybody? The story goes Blazer Gordon. Can I just remind you, because I want to add something to that. Blazer Gordon was a very choshva, very, very esteemed member in the Kollel, and in Yeshiva, and he was Blazer Gordon. He became son-in-law by somebody called Bavom Yitzchak Nebiezer, who was a very rich, very wealthy, very esteemed balabos, and he married his only daughter. And Blazer Gordon was invited to be hosted by his in-laws for a number of years, and he was looked after by his in-laws. After the very good shidduch, Blazer Gordon, and he married that girl, and his father-in-law was looking after the young couple. He stayed there for a number of years, and he was growing and steiging and learning with tremendous asmoda. And his father-in-law felt very privileged to look after the young couple, and it is growing and budding Talmid Chacham. After a number of years, a village nearby offered him a job as a rav, and he went with this offer. He went to his father-in-law. He said, "Listen, as far as I'm concerned, I would love to stay on learning, but it's on your cheshbon. You know, you're supporting me and you're supporting us, and I don't know if I should. What do you think?" His father said, no, absolutely not. I wanted to stay and learn in my house, and I wanted to stay over here." So he declined the offer, and he stayed on in his father-in-law's house, and they carried on learning. And the story continues that this happened a few years later again, and another community offered him for a job, a larger kahil already. And here again, the Blazer Gordon said, "Listen, I've got to ask my shver what he thinks and what he says." And again, the shver said, no, it's a privilege for me to look after you, to support you. And this happened a number of times. And his fame grew because he became a greater and greater Talmid Chacham, until he came to a stage that he was offered a position in a famous position of Telz. Now, Telz was a very prominent community which also housed a kollel and a yeshiva. Telz was one of the Ir V'Ein Beis Yisrael, as we say, was a very beautiful community, very, very large community. And here they offered him the job. And basically, Gordon's family had grown already. He had already family, had children, and he wasn't such a young kollel, young man anymore. He had grown up a bit. And the position was offered him of Telz. And then he said, "Listen, I don't know, I've got to ask my father-in-law." And he therefore went up to his shver and he asked him, and his shver said, "Listen, I don't know, I'm going to discuss it with my wife." And the wife said, "Maybe you really should consider it. It's been here for a number of years. You know, eventually life moves on." And then this shver of Leviz Gordon said, "Well, who knows? Who knows who supports whom? Is it really us supporting him, or is it them supporting us? Who knows?" And his wife said, no, come on, time is ripe to move on, and he should take this very prominent, prestigious community, that's this job. And so he returned to Blazer Gordon. He said, "Listen, I think you should move on." And he did. He took the job, and it took a number of months until they actually moved on, and they were ready to pack the case, everything. Eventually they moved. And once they packed the bags and they moved on, and they literally that very day, they packed the suitcase, they packed the whole swag, and everything was that very day that Blazer Gordon and his wife arrived in Telz. He gets a message, a terrible message, that his father-in-law was Nifta. He passed away that very day that Blazer Gordon had left the house. So in hindsight, this was the meaning, this was really true, what his father-in-law had said. Who knows who supports whom? It appears at first glance that it's the father-in-law with his wealth and his finance that is supporting his son-in-law and that young family. But in reality, it was quite the opposite, that it was actually the Torah of the son-in-law that was actually supporting his shver. The second that wasn't anymore in place, the second that there wasn't anymore that Torah in the house, and in that minute, they actually ceased to shower and shine the Torah in the household. The there was no schuskiel when his father was nifta. Who knows who supports whom? And this was famously the Dain Lopian story. It's a famous story. I want to add something that really, it's mamash mefurish, black and white in Megillah Zos. It's absolutely black and white. Look no further. This story happened not just with Ablaze Gordon and his shver, but it happened mamash with. We're in the beginning of the Megillah. That's exactly what happened. We find in the Megillah of Megillah's Rus, we find that Elimelech moved away from Eretz Yisrael. What's the reason why he moved away? He moved away, as Rashi says, because he was Tzoras Ein. He was concerned about his financial. He was the Panas Hadoi, Rashi says. Oshe Golo, the second Rashi in Megillah. He was a very wealthy man. Panas Hadoi, he was financing the whole community, the whole country. V'yotzom Eretz Yisrael, he left Eretz Yisrael, chutz l'oretz, to outside of the Pibnei Tzoras Ein, because of stinginess. He didn't want to support everybody so much anymore. And therefore, because of this Tzoras Ein, because of the stinginess, he left. Now, what happened once he left? He was concerned about his own money. And what happened was that he left, he went to Stelimoyov. In Stelimoyov, what happened in Stelimoyov? As soon as he ends up there, as soon as he lands, what happens? He loses his life. Before that, he loses his money. He loses his fields. His whole finance is disintegrating. His whole wealth is finished within 5 minutes. He ends up there. Not only that, but he actually dies. His two sons die. Everything disintegrates. Everything goes completely the wrong way. But he loses all his money. Now, he wanted to really look after his money. That's why he emigrates. That's why he left. He was Tzoras Ein, but what happened was, as soon as he left, he actually lost everything, which in hindsight was evident that the only reason why he was so wealthy, the only reason why he had all that money, was in order to support fellow Yidden. But once he wanted to look after himself and he moved away, that's when he actually lost everything. Because it wasn't him supporting fellow Yidden, on the contrary, he only had his wealth because he was able to give to others and share with others. Once he stopped himself from that giving and that sharing, once he decided, I'm moving away to stay more because I want to look after myself, that very minute, he lost everything. He lost his money and his wealth. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he gave it to him in the first place to share, and once he didn't share anymore, he lost everything. Who knows who supports whom? It wasn't him supporting. It wasn't any Melech supporting the Eden, on the contrary. He was the receiving people who were actually supporting any Melech. It's in Mamash the same story. It just happened quite a few years before that. I just felt like sharing this with you. Okay, gentlemen, we are up to Simon Tov Samich Aleph. We're learning Sif Hey today. We're up to Sif Dalet. We discussed yesterday the halachas of a matzah. If it is, how do we know? How do we define of it being fully baked? This is the topic we discussed here. How do we know? How do I identify that a matzah is fully baked? Today we're going to be learning another topic, which is also very relevant, and that's what about a soaked matzah? Now, the background information that we need to be aware of is that how do we define? Now, we know we need to eat a matzah, and a matzah needs to also have a tam matzah, needs to have a taste of a matzah. What happens if I soak a matzah? And I'm not talking about geboxed. If I'm soaking the matzah and I eat it, am I yoitzer or not? Is it lacking in tam matzah? Is it my yoitzer or not? And this is very relevant for people who are finding eating a bit difficult. I mean, people imagine who don't have who their teeth are causing a lot of trouble, dentures, etc. Who are finding it difficult to chew. So could they have a soaked matzah to be yoitzer, the mitzvah and the obligation of achilas matzah on the first night of Pesach? Is that okay or not? We'll be seeing an enormous chiddush. I wasn't aware of this. When I learned this bialocha, I didn't realize the enormous chiddush that the bialocha says until actually somebody pointed it out. Once I look at it, it's true, and I want to say the chiddush is so big that I looked up in a couple of halachas for him, contemporaries from. I don't think they've picked up this point, everybody. So let's see what you think about this, because I think there's enormous chiddush in the bialocha over here. So, Sif Dalet teaches us the following halacha. Yoitze Odom be Matzah Shuyo. A person is Yoitze, the obligation of eating a matzah with a soaked matzah. What's a soaked matzah? I take a matzah and I soak it in water, and once I've soaked it, it's all what's the word? Like soaked and mushy, I don't know. Take it, and now I eat it in such a way. Am I yoitze or not? That's a soaked matzah. So the halacha is yoitze otom. You are yoitze with a soaked matzah, but a strong disclaimer here. That's if it's drinkable, if it's become completely liquid. No. So it can be soaked, but if it's not a solid substance anymore, if it's a liquid substance, then you're not yoitz anymore. Havalim bishla, but if you cooked it, and yoitz boy, you're not yoitz. So, really, a soaked matzah is alright. Provided you didn't soak it so much that it became liquidy. If it's liquidy, it's no good. Secondly, you cannot make it drinkable. If it's a liquidy substance, it's also no good enough. Finally, if you baked it, if you cooked it over, you can't be yoitz the mitzvah anymore. Now the Mishtibur points out, as if kon yudzayin, if it's soaked, you can be yoitz b'di'avet lo lechatchila. So what comes out lemaisa, that if you take a bit of matzah, somebody's finding chewing difficult, could you take a matzah and soak it a few minutes in water, and then you eat it like this to fulfill the mitzvah? Would that work? Based on what we are saying now, would that work?
For mitzvahs, it seems like it.
Yeah, and the answer is yeah. And indeed, the Mishnah Berurah says, it's the third line from the wide lines, velezokain, and an old person, velechoyle, somebody's unwell, shekosheloyde, it's difficult for him, lechol, to eat matzah, veishu, to eat the dry matzah is rather difficult for a person like that, muta, is an adafil lechatchila, you can even lechatchila, lishroys hamatzah, b'mayim, take that matzah and soak it in water, that's alright. Just make sure that you don't soak it so that it becomes liquid, as we saw in Shulchan Aruch. But yes, you can take a matzah and soak it and soak it a bit, and that's fine. Now, what about dipping? Dipping it. So not soaking, but dipping. Is that alright?
What purpose?
Because the chewing is getting too hard, and you want to just dip it a bit. So the Mishnah Berurah in Shaar Tzion points out that it's fine. You can do that. As long as the taste remains of the matzah and you're only dipping it for a little bit, that's fine. The Mishnah Berurah in Sefkot Yudches discusses what's the halacha with regards to soaking the matzah, not in water, but in a different liquid. So say you like to dip your matzah, or to soak your matzah rather, in instead of water, you want to have it apple juice. Or let's say you like matzah with Coke taste. Is that all right?
There's no tough matzah.
Very good. So Mishnah Berurah says that whilst we have now allowed soaking matzah in water, that's because water doesn't really take away the time, the taste of the matzah. However, if you put it in a different liquid, such as the juice or anything else, you're likely to take away the time matzah, and therefore it'll be a problem. So everything we discussed until now, that a slightly moist matzah is fine, that's only if it's in water. Do not attempt to dip or soak your matzah in a different liquid. There you certainly wouldn't be yoitz the mitzvah. Now, based on that, we're now finding what a choyle should be doing. Mishnah Berurah tells us, a choyle who is unable to eat, should be eating matzah. The shiurim of matzah we've discussed. The shiurim of the matzah you need to eat if you kizesim. The way you do that, if a chole is unable to actually eat, what he should be doing, he should be soaking his matzah in water for a little bit, and that's the way he should be eating. This is what generally the consensus of the rabbonim is, that if somebody's unable to eat, elderly people, they should soak the matzahs in water. Now, Rabbosai, this is true, but it's not the absolute truth. There is a bialach over here, which seems to be telling us that there's an even better way of fulfilling the mitzvah, rather than soaking it. The bialach seems to be saying that better yet than soaking, somebody can't chew, better yet than soaking is top of page 122 in bialacha. Somebody who is finding it difficult to eat the matzahs. Yevesha, if they are dry. Which, yes, matzahs are dry. Sheyoichel matzah mefureres. He should eat crunched up matzah. Af shuki kemach matzah meal. Crunched up matzah. It's like flour. Umevochin al ze amoitzi, you can make a moitzi on it. Vachilas matzah. Ubilvat sheyoichel kezayis. As long as you've eaten the kezayis. The Bialochovi is still telling us that better yet than to eat a soaked matzah, you should take a tablespoon of matzah and eat it like that. If it's crunched up, matzah meal, you should eat it, and that's the way of fulfilling the mitzvah of achilas matzah. From the words of the Bialocha, it appears that this is the better option, better even than having it soaked. And I can appreciate the reason, because it's got more time matzah. It's completely, the taste of the matzah is 100% existent, and it's probably better yet than having it soaked. So the way I interpret this bialocha, please tell me if you differ, the way I interpret this bialocha is that this seems to be the better option than the soaked matzah. Consequently, if somebody is unable to chew the matzahs on Leil HaPesach, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of achilas matzah on the first and the second night, it appears that it is better to have a tablespoon of crunched matzah rather than to have it soaked. I think that is the meaning of the bialocha. Right, okay, we move on. Now, the next topic, Sif Hei, top of page 122. Background information is, there's a concept of tam, of taste. We know that if there is two liquid substances which mix, say you've got a bit of milk that falls in your cholent, so we know this is one way of two substances having a chemical kind of mixture is when it's liquidy. And then we've got all the halachas, bottle b'shishim, not bottle b'shishim, chometz, not bottle, etc., etc. Right, that's one whole topic which is discussed in its relevant place. Then there is another area of halacha altogether, and that's the halacha, what happens if two solid substances touch. Solid, not liquid, but solid. What happens if two solid substances touch? Say, for instance, you've got basar, you've got meat, which is kosher, touches meat, which is nevela. If they touch, and they are hot, what happens then? What happens then if two hot substances touch, which are solid and not liquid? So the halacha is that if they are both completely, what is called kochush, if they are called dry, as opposed to oily, I don't think dry is the right word. Has the opposite of oily? What's the opposite of oily? If it's not fatty, what is it called? It's not dry, what is it? Okay, let's go for non-oily. All right. Pardon?
Lean.
Lean, is that the word? Lean? Okay, fine. Okay, I didn't know. Fine. So if you've got a too oily, fatty pieces of meat, which are hot, they touch. That's one area of halacha. If then the oil, the fatty substance, makes the nevela, the issa, the tam, spread within the kosher meat. You've got a fatty piece of meat, which is kosher, a fatty piece of meat, which is teif. If they touch whilst they're hot, the oily, fatty element makes it spread within the entire kosher meat and it becomes teifa. If they are both lean, however, the halacha is lean, non-oily substances tend to be not so, they don't tend to spread so much. Consequently, if you have got them, the halacha is you don't have to worry about it, the issa, spreading throughout the entire kosher food item. Rather, it only spreads for a tiny amount, for a little bit. Now, this is very relevant when it comes to matzahs, because on matzahs, there's very few food items which are as lean as matzahs. In fact, we generally are very machmir when it comes to consideration of what is considered oily. But a matzah is surely something which has, by all accounts, no oil and fatness at all to it, and therefore it's considered very lean. Therefore, if you've got a matzah which touches bread and they're both hot, would you have to worry about it spreading further or not? So halach is going to be, you don't have to worry so much. And I'll tell you why this is very relevant. It sounds like very obscure. Who would have a matzah touching bread? That's like just mention that to, you know, to our wives, and they're going to go like, how could I be to have matzah touching bread? How could that sound crazy? The answer is, it doesn't sound crazy at all. It happens in every matzah bakery. Every single matzah bakery. Why? Why does it happen in every matzah bakery? Because you're going to have matzahs which will become kofel, for instance. You're going to have matzahs, for instance, we're going to see that in a minute. There's matzahs that double over, and doubled over matzahs we consider becoming chometz. We consider not fully baked, whatever, we're going to see matzah kfula is considered chometz. So now we've got a matzah which doubles over and touches another matzah, what are you going to do? And doubled over matzahs, kfulas, are very common because they fold over whilst, you know, in the process. So therefore, you've got matzahs which are considered chometz steak, and they may be touching other matzahs, or they may be doubled over within itself. You want to cut it out and take the other part. Can you do that? Yes or no? So the question discussed now is, what happens if you've got a matzah touching chometz in its heat? So the background that we've got to be aware is that when something is oily, then it spreads within the entire food item. If it is, what was it? Lean. If it's lean, then it doesn't spread. It's only a kedei klifa. And this is what is discussed over here. Let's have a bit of a head start now. Im ofu chometz im matzah. What happens if you bake chometz with matzah? Chometz and matzah, you bake them together. Lo nesra, it doesn't become osu. Elohim kein noga b'chometz. First point you need to be aware, you need to appreciate, you need to touch. Now why is it not obvious? Why is it not obvious? Why would you have thought that perhaps even if they don't touch, you might have a problem? The answer is, imagine you've got an oven, and in the oven you've got chometz, and in the oven you've got matzah, and they're both in the same closed oven. You would assume perhaps that the smoke, the avir, the recha, will go one another. We know there's a concept which is a big topic in Yeridah, Recha Milsa, the smoke, if it's considered a real transmitter of blias, Recha Milsa. So say, for instance, you have in your oven, and in your oven you're going to have a bosso nevela and bosso kosher. If you put them both in the same oven, would you say that the smoke transmits blias, and therefore the kosher meat becomes teifa from the smoke, even though they didn't touch? So that's a discussion as to whether Recha melts or not. Is the Recha the smoke? Does that transmit issa from one piece to the other, does it or not? So here we're learning that no, rechemilza, if you bake in one oven matzah and you bake in the same oven chametz, that itself, if they don't touch, that's not a problem. So recha lav milza, the smoke is not considered a transmitting that's it, thank you. So recha lav milza, we don't consider it to go the chametz to go into the matzah just by being together in the oven without touching each other. That's point one. Recha lav milza. Elohim came noga b'chometz. But if they touch, then you got a problem. If you touch, you got a problem. So what are you going to do? So your daloch is, v'noi tell me mokim shenoga k'dei netila. K'dina es mokim v'ashamot. All you need to do is a k'dei netila. K'dei netila is a finger width. That's how much you need to break off. If chometz touches a matzah, all you need to do is you break off kedei netila, which is the finger, kedei klifa, a finger width, approximately, give it a couple of centimeters, you break that part off, and the rest of the matzah is 100% kosher. You're going to say, what many here? This chametz, this bread was touching this matzah, and they were both hot. How dare you eating this matzah? The answer is yes. Relax, calm down, because it can only go as far. It's kochush, it is lean, it's not oily, it can only go that far. It can only go kedei klifa, it will not spread further. Yeah, but it may have touched the other side. Yes, if it may have touched the other side, by all means, crack that off as well. But any areas which didn't touch, you can just crack it off, these 2 centimeters, and shalom al yisrael, and that's it. You don't have to worry further than that. That's with the God. If it would be oily, the halacha would be very different. To summarize what we learned this evening, gentlemen, we learned that with regards to a soaked matzah, you can be yoitza mitzvahs, achilas matzah if it's soaked, as long as it's not drinkable, as long as it hasn't been cooked. And as long as you've got still the time of the matzah, you must taste of the matzah. Dipping is for sure okay. Soaking just for a bit is for sure okay. As long as you soaked it in water and not in any other liquid. So a Coke tasting matzah which was soaked in Coke, leave that not for the Seder night. But dipping is fine, and right. This is b'di'evet. However, it is considered perfectly lechatchila for somebody who is unable to eat regular matzah in a regular way. We learned the bialocha says that's really important for people who are finding chewing very hard. The bialocha seems to be saying even better than that. If somebody is unable to chew and unable to eat normally, even better than that is to take a tablespoon of matzah meal of crunched matzah to eat that. Make sure you get enough kezayis and you eat it like this, and that's very good to be mekayem the mitzvah of achilas matzah in such a way. Then we learned about the sugya of touching. So if they're in the oven without touching, that's for sure okay. Recha lav milza. If they do touch, the chametz and the matzah do touch, then the halacha is, all you need to do is you take off kedei netila, which is a couple of centimeters. More than that, you do not need to worry, because it is not, it cannot spread any further than that. Okay, we'll discuss the remote tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. I wish you all a very good evening.